Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber, back together at the New York Stock Exchange. Pre-market is a little soft as the number of sell-side firms cutting their U.S. equity outlook now grows to nearly half a dozen. Meantime, more firms cutting Q3 guidance on supply chain challenges. Today, it's Pulte Home and Sherwin-Williams. Our roadmap this morning begins with Coinbase, though, versus the SEC. Facing legal action, Coinbase firing back, accusing the regulator of, quote, sketchy behavior and of making a land grab.
Plus, Car Wars, Ford poaches the head of Apple's top secret car project and a former Tesla executive.
And betting on payments, JPM and PayPal announcing some new deals in that space. We'll get to it. But first, Jim, great to have you back after a long absence.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I know you were talking with Joe a moment ago about all the sell-side desks that are cutting their targets for either the end of this year or next year.
Yeah, I mean, Bank of America is probably the most threatening, which says this may not end now, but when it ends, it could end badly. When I read that, what it does is basically say September's been weak, historically. Not a good month at all. October's been a bottom. I think a lot of people are trying to anticipate that. If all the strategists anticipate something, then it tends not to happen. So while I am understandably cautious because the month is it has not been a good month, you know, David, one of the things we've learned about the strategists is that if they speak in unison, perhaps we should be worrying about something else.
Typically, the concern may already have passed.
Well, we know that a lot of stocks, I mean, the S&P obviously has not had a very big turn.
No.
In a long time.
No. Well, how concerned are you then about a significant slowdown in economic growth that is actually going to be reflected perhaps in earnings and therefore possibly in a discounted S&P price?
Well, I think there are influences of inflation. Sherwin-Williams, as you mentioned, Pulte has some things that are actually an outlier versus what Toll told me a couple weeks ago. PPG at force majeure and a lot of things. But in the end, David, the remarkable staying power of technology has kept this market afloat. And I don't think that changes.
Meaning the leadership stays kind of the same?
Look, I can say that Netflix is going to have a great quarter. I think
Netflix obviously had an incredible week last week, but it was one of its greatest weeks.
But
obviously catching up because it has been a laggard throughout the year.
Right.
Apple had a good week last week. I know we've already had a trading day this week. I'm not forgetting
that. With the 13 meeting coming up, Apple 13. And then, look, let's just say it as it is. Let's talk about a company that people had written off when Jeff Bezos stepped up. I think people are starting to realize that Jassy's the real deal. And that Amazon, with the Delta variant, Carl, in Europe, where I was, 70% vaccinated, green pass to get in for a gelato. I mean, green pass being two vaccinations. Amazon everywhere. It's really kind of freaky. Everywhere. I mean, I'm talking about, like, there were boxes of Amazon. Every single. I mean, Jassy, underrated. Amazon Web Services doing well. So it's positive on Microsoft. They make an acquisition. People go rah, rah. So you've got maybe 30% of the S&P.
That's true. Yeah. And today, Guggenheim, for example, takes Alphabet to 3,400 from 3,140. You mentioned Netflix, JPM, adding to their price target hike on Atlantic yesterday, going to 780. So, yeah. But what you're saying is the cyclical trade is not what you want.
Well, I think I was listening to Brian Sullivan this morning at 5, and he was talking to an analyst, talking about the idea that should you really own the 5x earnings, which is, by the way, Nucor and Cleveland Cliffs, which I have on tonight. And I think the answer is that at 5x earnings, you're pretty much expecting what happened to Sherwin-Williams today and what happened to PPG yesterday. So I am not sanguine because September is a tough month, and because there are a lot of people who like to sell ahead of October, as foolish as I think that is. But I obviously, if you don't get If you do not get stimulus, there'll be people who are upset. And if you get stimulus, there'll be people upset because of inflation. Because, frankly, anybody, as Mr. Bullard said, anybody who wants a job, get a job. So I think that you've got the inflation people on one side, and they're ready to pounce. And then you got the people who say slow down. They're ready to pounce. Let them pounce. You know, let them pounce. I remember I used to go to the dog track all the time. And that mechanical rabbit, sometimes it falls off. And the dogs pounce. But let me tell you something. David,
yes.
There's nothing to eat on a mechanical rabbit. You got that. There's something to take away this morning.
There's always some wisdom that you share with us, Jim, and I will remember that one.
Right?
I'll think about that tonight.
There goes Swifty, but Swifty got no meat.
Before I fall asleep.
Yeah.
That's what I'll use to sort of put myself to sleep, imagining that meatless rabbit.
I really like that approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a spaghetti, midnight spaghetti.
Did you really?
Well, that's a big tradition in Italy. If you have a party, I throw a party for an associate. 12 o'clock, all the men go in and make spaghetti.
I like that.
Yeah, one day you'll join me in a midnight spaghetti party.
I would like to do that as well. I don't really think that will happen, unfortunately, because these invitations, they kind of they make it this far.
Like my olive oil. You never
actually
get my
don't
olive
make
oil.
It all the way.
We're not going to have a bumper crop of olive oil this year because of the weather. Only do 120 liters versus 160.
Oh. Yeah.
But our wine will be ready next year. And it won't taste good.
No, it won't.
No.
No.
It's already deemed to not taste good.
Yeah, that's not going to be good. But you don't need to send me a bottle of that wine.
No, you probably want to hold off on that.
Yeah.
It's just not the finest. But, David, I got to tell you, come back fresh.
Yes.
And you realize that there's this kind of endless negativity. I mean, when I read the strategists, I say, you know, it's been negative since the bottom, and maybe that's why we've had such a big run since March of last year when all hell was supposed to rain upon us.
You really think it's been that negative?
Yes.
I mean, I can listen to people on our air during the course of the day. I don't think you'd come away feeling...
The list has gotten longer. You got the taper now. You got the expiration of benefits. You got seasonality on top of the... valuation and supply chain worries.
Taper is never talked about in the context of larger bond buying. Now, the issuance is going to start, all right? Now, there's no doubt about that. But there is a tremendous desire for treasuries, which are still relatively better valued versus anything from Japan, anything in Europe. Japan, by the way, we don't talk about Japan's red hot. How convenient that PayPal picks up one of these buy now, pay later outfits for $2.7 billion. By the way, Square paid $29 billion for Afterpay.
Yes.
So I think they probably have some after remorse.
Well, different size business. The PayPal, obviously, it's in Japan. It's much smaller. It's 10% of the size, so to speak, in terms of what they're paying.
But you know that PayPal, if it had been tied up with eBay, which everyone hit PayPal down to, like, 270 when they announced finally that they're almost done.
Yes.
PayPal can extend that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why the stock is up. Buy now, pay later. One day when rates go up, David, that's not such a good strategy.
It may not be. But right now, it's all the rage. I mean, we also saw a firm stock price soar when it announced that venture, I guess, for lack of a better term, with Amazon a couple of weeks back.
Oh, with a firm.
Obviously,
I'm going to try to speak with them. Max Levchin has always been one of my favorites. And they wrote him off, too. People write people off. And that is something that I think we have to remember. There are these CEOs that are constantly being written off. Mark Benioff was being written off because of the Slack acquisition. Andy Jassy, great example.
Yeah.
When people think that Andy Jassy is a moron, I mean, the only thing that he's moronic about is that he likes the Giants. It's called as we see it.
He's a Jersey guy, right? Isn't he?
Did anyone even draft a Giant?
Maybe. Oh, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
He's not only a Jersey guy, but he's rabid. I think one of the reasons why Philadelphia didn't get the Amazon headquarters, he hates the Eagles. People think I'm kidding. This is direct insight.
Wow.
He hates the Eagles.
And so, okay.
It's one of the contributing factors.
Yes, yeah.
Maybe.
Didn't help.
Yeah. Well, they went to Queens and he didn't like the Jets. I don't know.
No.
And then they didn't get it anyway because Queens didn't know what the heck it was doing.
I like the Jets this year, just for the record. I don't want to mix too much.
You think we're going to win
draft
more than two games?
I think that coach is, he takes no prisoners.
All right. Give me a,
we're going to talk some NFL.
Give me a Jets win total before we move on to Coinbase.
Six.
Just give me six.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll take that.
Okay.
Competitive division.
Meanwhile, Coinbase is down in the pre-market. In a blog post, the crypto exchange says it has received a Wells notice from the SEC threatening a lawsuit over its planned product that would allow users to earn interest by lending crypto assets. As a result, Coinbase says it will delay the launch of its Lend product until at least October. Interesting thread from Brian Armstrong. Some really sketchy behavior coming out of the SEC recently. And then he goes into what he calls story time.
Let's talk about that. First of all, there's a man. There's a man named Gary Gensler. He taught Bitcoin at MIT. He's a regular. I don't know who Armstrong's lawyers are, but this has got to be one of this is more stupid than what Musk did. I mean, Musk poked fun. This is actually saying, as remember the CFO Haas said, we got to school Gensler. My contacts within the SEC are not happy about this. And I don't want to call it moronic. I'm going to leave it at one of the most stupid things I've ever seen.
Really?
Wait, what part of it is stupid? Publicly putting this
sketchy?
Out?
Calling Gensler sketchy? David, this is not Harvard versus Yale.
Understood. Clearly, Mr. Armstrong is frustrated, saying that they're being threatened with legal action before a single bit of actual guidance has been given to the industry and the products.
You know what's a good strategy?
Now, typically
shutting
you would,
up.
Yeah, typically you would be advised by counsel, I would think, to not air your grievances publicly with the SEC.
Remember what Haas said, CFO?
No. Tell me.
We have to school the SEC.
Oh, right. I do remember that. Sorry. Yes, I remember what she said.
Having,
yes.
You know, known the SEC, yes. And people who are in the SEC and that a lot of people who went to law school with me in the SEC, they don't take kindly to being told that they need to be schooled. And the difference between Coinbase and the SEC is the SEC has unlimited firepower. If they deem this thing a security, which I think Gensler's going to do, then it really doesn't matter. You know, I don't care if people think that they have a sketchy behavior. They're a regulator. They're regulated. And they regulate Coinbase. So I think Gary, and I've known Gary for 20 years, is probably the most sophisticated of regulators. So the idea that Brian Armstrong, obviously a self-interested man, wants to take on the SEC, what does he think? What is it, like a street fight? Sharks, jets?
Right. All he's asking for is some clarity. He just wants some clarity for them so they understand
that is so wrong,
the
David.
World that they're operating in.
Some really sketchy behavior coming out of the SEC. Clarity? Why not say, listen, I'm not sure about the SEC.
Those may have been ill-chosen words, and you're right. They may
suboptimal choice and an ill-advised strategy.
Suffer consequences from doing that. But at the same time, you could understand perhaps their frustration in being
not
understanding what it is they're supposed to do.
Well, you don't air your frustration in a tweet? Gary Gensler?
Well, I assume if you believe the SEC has to operate in a political framework to some degree, he may be trying to sway enough public opinion to pressure the SEC into altering their behavior.
I think the idea of pressuring the SEC, it's easier to pressure the Southeast Conference, that SEC, than it is, which, by the way, some teams look pretty good there, Dave,
okay.
Than it is the actual SEC. And I think it's a shameful behavior, frankly. I think it's shameful. I think that there should be respect for the regulators. I think that this shows a contempt for the regulators that is not right. I think that these are people in government who are serving and doing a very good job, and to trash them publicly in Twitter and on air is not just ill-advised, but it's saying, listen, we want war. And you can't go to war with the regulators. They're always going to have the last word. So I think Armstrong should choose his words more wisely, take back that tweet, and understand you can't go to war against the man who might regulate.
What about the product itself? Do you think it is suspect?
I think that I'll give you a good example. I don't think it matters what I think. I think that it makes sense to be able to lend against. What matters is Gensler, and that's where they're making a big mistake. Now, had they sit down with Gensler and if Gensler explained his position rather than schooling Gensler, I think it would be good. But imagine if Jamie Dimon said, you know what, the SEC's got sketchy behavior and I got to school him. David, who regulates JP Morgan?
The Fed.
And SEC?
Yes.
I think Jamie Dimon called Gensler
a bozo.
The Fed's
in there every day. They got a lot of people who live at JP Morgan.
Gensler is a bozo, and he doesn't know anything, and good luck to him.
Yeah.
No. sketchy behavior. David,
Jamie Dimon, A, has more credibility if he were to actually choose to publicly lament something. It would be taken perhaps more seriously because he's Jamie Dimon, probably the singular guy in the financial services industry. Secondly, he probably would know enough not to do that. And why do you want to choke?
Because
him?
Musk makes cars and he can poke fun.
Right.
These guys make finance. No fun. Gensler taught this at MIT. He's going to school them. Welcome back, Cotter.
Your dreams were your ticket out.
Doesn't
right?
take long, does it, for him to do that to me? To treat me in what I regard to be a contemptuous way?
Never. No,
really?
No, of course not. I never do that.
No? How come you didn't get the Jeopardy job in the end?
That's what
I mean, honestly,
it's not over.
You were the best.
Thank you. It's not over.
It's
not over.
Yeah, well, what happened to Matt?
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know? Matt, of course, was one of the superstars, and then David leaves,
yes.
And Matt's done.
No, Matt went on. He's in the new season.
Is he?
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah, we're going into extra innings on that one.
All I can tell you, that's the most exciting thing that's happened to me in 2021, was watching David conduct
Jeopardy. Oh, my
Jeopardy.
God.
It was.
Thank
That's
you.
Why I love you.
I love you, too.
It's good to have both of you guys back. Take a look at the futures. As we said, a little bit soggy this morning as we are in a holiday-shortened week. We'll talk a little bit Apple after the break. Not just the car personnel, but this call from Katie Huberty from Morgan Stanley. We're back in a moment.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Apple's up in the pre-market after hitting that record high yesterday when it announced a September 14th event in which new iPhones are expected to be launched. Meantime, Ford has announced it has hired away Doug Field from Apple to lead the automaker's emerging technology efforts. Field had been working on Apple's secret car project. Interesting, there's been some reporting out there that Tim Cook wants to launch some new category before he starts even thinking about an exit. But this is an interesting personnel move.
Yeah, I always felt that if Tim Cook was really interested in auto, he should never have let Samsung get Harman, because Harman is the entertainment guts, and that was a way to be able to really integrate Apple as well as, you know, much better than integrating Apple the way that Ted Lasso calls and says, Siri, please turn on the music. Actually, of course, that was Roy Kent. This is what I care about. This man, Field, it's not about Apple. David, it's about Tesla. He had a light Tesla. He wants to wipe the floor with Tesla.
Yes,
he's coming after Tesla.
You've shared that before.
No,
now you're talking
Field.
About Field. Ford versus Tesla.
Field.
Not versus Ferrari, versus Tesla.
Great movie. Very underrated.
Very good.
Was good.
Field is not a fan of Tesla. Kind of wants to go back to Ford to be able to, remember, he started Ford. Go back to Ford to be able to prove that the Ford electronic fleet that they've got,
yeah,
including the F-150, is better than Tesla. And don't forget the Mach-E 5, the Mustang. So I think that this is a grudge match. I know a lot of people instantly say, are you kidding me? Ford can never touch Musk. I think, remember, people seem to forget that Ford is going up against what I regard to be some sort of space-age pickup that, I don't know, David, when you've seen the pickup, the Tesla pickup, does that not remind you of like some sort of like Flintstone mobile or something? Bam, bam.
I'm not a pickup guy, so I'm probably the last
God,
person you should rely on to decide
Carl,
what is.
I can't talk, dude. I had a Super Duty 350. I could run over David and then reverse and run over him again. But that's not why would I want to do that?
I don't think you'd want to do that.
No, I don't want to do that. But anyway, I think that Ford is a pickup truck company. And this is a genius move because Field was obviously someone Apple didn't want to get away. And apparently he's great, but he's motivated not to hurt Apple. It's all about Musk.
Interesting. We'll talk more about the App Store headlines as well, which is what Katie Huberty addresses in her note this morning. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash and count down to the opening bell when we get started on this Wednesday morning. Don't go anywhere.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're getting ready for an opening bell on this, what day? It's Wednesday already.
It's Wednesday. Something.
How'd that happen?
I don't look at me. I don't make the calendar.
I will not look at you. But what do you want to do for a mad dash? Okay, at least your first of the week.
The stock was down 30 points at one point yesterday, Chipotle. All right. Now, that's the first real decline that we've had on the march to 2000. And this is one I've liked since 300. Why? Because have you had the cauliflower rice? That explains everything. But Cowen makes it a top pick. And what people don't know, 27% margins, which is insane. 2,250 price target, which I think is totally doable. But this is what's caught my eye. David, they're thinking about doing, they can do three. What is so, what are you last snickering about?
I mean, it was funny. The John Oliver thing, you had to watch that. It was fun. And it's reminding me how much you've loved Chipotle.
The Oliver thing was brilliant.
It was pretty fun.
It was brilliant.
But, and it's you and me, and you're very upset with me,
Chipotle,
of course, because I continue not to eat Chipotle.
Right. Well, I just don't understand that at all. I think I'll have it today in your honor. $3 million in units they think they can do.
Okay.
David, $2 million is a gigantic amount.
So $3 million a unit.
Yeah, remember, they own. I've always felt that this is a better model than franchise. No offense to franchisees out there. But, David, if they can do $3 million, I mean, no one's ever come close to that. So let me just say that if they can do $3 million per unit and they open all the units they're thinking about, let's say 500, 600 units, well, there's no reason to set to stop at 2,200. So I'm giving this the green light.
You are.
Yes, I am.
You still love it.
More than ever.
You love the way the company operates and executes.
Yes.
And you love the food.
They understood everything because they had a problem, obviously, with airborne illness. They were so ready for COVID, and they have make lines. Throughput's amazing. Their digital is as good as their in-store. Nobody has that. So when in-store is really wide open after Delta, and I think there is such a thing as after Delta, well, then they can do $3 million, and we'll be buzzing about it.
All right. There it is. Chipotle obviously had a very nice move since what we more or less call the beginning of the pandemic. Yeah. What?
No. Your suit doesn't. It's not a suit.
We've got an opening bell.
It's two suits. It's a denim suit and it's a brioche.
Just keep your shot from here.
You're wearing two suits. David's got two suits on.
No, I don't. I look good. Thank you.
By
the way, you can catch us anytime, anywhere. Don't listen to him, though.
Well, you can't
just
see
follow
with
the Squawk on the Street opening bell podcast.
How do you
will have to hear a little bit of Jim as well during the course of it. All right, we're back in about 4 minutes with an opening bell.
We were mentioning a moment ago the move of that engineering chief from Apple to Ford. The other big note on Apple today comes from Katie Huberty of Morgan Stanley, specifically about the App Store headlines that, in her words, Jim, have more bark than bite.
I know, but it's a contradictory note herself. More bark than bite is the headline, but then actually talks about a slowdown. Service revenue slowdown. And even though Apple is going to be able to handle these changes with developers being able to circumvent the payment system, in the near term, App Store is trending lower than our forecasts, other than ad sales. Now, we know that the upside has been this revenue stream. So I did not get comfort when I read this note. And, you know, Katie is very much on board, but she's a straight shooter, and I felt this note would have caused the stock to go down, not up.
She does reiterate the overweight, stays at 168. We'll watch Apple today, obviously, coming off of record highs. There's the opening bell and the CNBC real-time exchange. At the big board today, it's space technology company Redwire celebrating its listing via SPAC at the NASDAQ biotech Omega Therapeutics. One thing we haven't touched on yet was what happened to Bitcoin yesterday and crypto in general on some of the headlines about this rollout in El Salvador. You got the president tweeting in the middle of the day about buying the dip, sort of a new chapter in how we monitor crypto.
I mean, it's kind of like, let's just say that I think that there is going to be broader acceptance. Starbucks, you know, there's a lot of recognition in the end. A Visa is going to have to offer more than the product it currently does. Obviously, PayPal, we didn't even really talk that much, I think, about what they're doing in Japan. But there's a nice confluence, which led me to believe that it was some sort of technical glitch, Carl, and not a decline. Now, I expect Mike Novogratz, you know, I know he's been talking, to have more insight onto the actual glitch. But the fact is that El Salvador's, we may think, well, wait a second, dismiss that. But what happens if they're the beginning of a trend? I mean, right now they're an outlier. Other countries are watching. I think that it could be, David. I think that there could be people who say, you know what, this is a great way to stabilize and prove that our economy is better than you think by and head off hyperinflation.
It's possible. Certainly.
Right.
The Venezuelans actually kind of went to the dollar, which has helped them. They've a little bit of a different, not Bitcoin, and unofficially, but they're basically a dollar-based economy now. And actually, Venezuela, thankfully, is doing a little bit better. Remember, they were in the midst of a humanitarian crisis in that country for a very long period of time.
People were starving. Right. We need to speak to Mike Worth, CEO. We need to speak to Schlumberger. We need the people, to the peeps that were stiffed by Venezuela.
Right. So. You're getting to, obviously, they're one,
remember, Venezuela's
they're one area of export, which
largest
is oil.
Repository of oil in the world.
Yeah.
And they, every year that they're every year the output has declined.
But as for whether other smaller countries somehow move to Bitcoin, Jim,
we're going to start building entire social network or support networks, government support networks on Bitcoin, then the risks to the downside will grow. Yes?
Yes. Let's get to the point. It's about China. I mean, President Xi is acting more and more like a fascist dictator. If he obviously does not like Bitcoin. He doesn't like property value. He doesn't like some things that he said about male TV hosts that I will not even go there because it was so disrespectful. And then again, the common prosperity, Carl. If you're rich there, you gotta lay low. But
we got fresh headlines today out of state media. Chinese government asking gaming firms to be responsible for minors' physical and mental health, will severely punish firms that are found to not adequately implement those regulations.
Well, this is a declaration against disorderly capitalism. And I think that one of the things that we may not realize is that, again, rolling back pre-Deng Xiaoping, you talked about that. There is a belief, I think, in China that it's time to end or regulate ride sharing, school tutoring, food delivery, and having an ideological repudiation of a whole era is rather incredible. Fintech, internet. So I don't think it's going to get better in China. I think it's going to get worse. Meanwhile, of course, another flyover Taiwan the other day. I mean, it's rather extraordinary what they're doing in terms of Taiwan. And they're talking about big capital. These are all the buzzwords, David, of revolution, frankly.
It's interesting listening to you. George Soros has been outspoken on this of late. I think he tends to agree with your point of view that there are no human rights there and probably no property rights. And he views Xi in similar ways. And then there's been pushback from the likes of perhaps even Larry Fink or Ray Dalio.
Opportunity's calling it.
Say again?
Opportunity, right? I think he's terrific. I come back, though, and I say that when you have someone calling online gaming spiritual opium, again, these are the kinds of things which just, they're fighting words, so to speak.
Yeah. Just to remind people, because they probably don't remember, George Soros was a heck of an investor. Maybe the greatest ever.
Yeah, that's true.
In terms
that's
of what true. He really was able to do in real returns, by the way. Real returns, and also charged fees that were below the average. I think he was like 2% for a long time.
Yeah.
Just that straight 2%. Then I think he went to, 1% management fee and 15% of the profits.
But he's great. But
created, obviously, a great fortune. He's a very, seen as a controversial figure. But when it comes to this stuff, you still may want to listen.
I think that we have to find things that are common ground. And I've got it. She is against celebrity watching. I think it's a Kardashian thing.
Okay.
We get a summit going on that one.
No more Kardashians in China or in general?
I think he's got a point there. I mean, you know, what value do they have?
Well, common prosperity, 3 hours a week now if you're under 18 of a video game watching, only 1 hour a day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Manly TV anchors.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
No more paying for tutoring.
Right. Well, there was rich poor there.
Have they moved to a I mean, there was a long article this weekend about it. I forget it was the Journal of the Times, in terms of China's next move here is to really rein in the ultra wealthy and try to create common prosperity in a real way.
How about the
and attack
property?
The inequalities that obviously we also suffer in this country in a different way.
Who has 400 people who make 100,000? Us or them?
I don't know.
Them. Chinese.
Cashin's view is that she's been monitoring food inflation and is aware of the pernicious effects of long-term inflation on the food
and
side.
And property inflation. Right. I think he's willing to have some banks fail. Obviously, we know how he feels about crypto. Look, he has to be watched. There are ways to be able to change Taiwan. You just creep in. You take over some islands. I'm waiting for President Biden to respond to the flyover, which included, five nuclear aircraft that can carry nuclear weapons. These are all an escalation that we seem to be ignoring as best as we can because of that dual relationship with Taiwan. I say watch it.
Speaking of the White House, we're going to monitor the House, which is now set debate on the spending bill. And we're going to watch any reaction from Senator Manchin. Meantime, the Times has a piece out that the White House today will announce plans to set a goal of producing nearly half of our electricity from the sun by 2050 as part of their effort to combat climate change.
No, again, not to belabor my guest tonight, but I happen to think he's one of the visionaries, Cleveland Cliffs, Gonsalves. I don't know if you know him. Gonsalves, you know that guy?
Yeah.
Well, when you look at his handout, people forget that wind and solar use a huge amount of steel. And these are what I think to be secular gains for steel that we've not had in years. By the way, there's a steel renaissance in our country. It's about the best time it's ever been for steel, and even to the point where we can handle the imports. But when you look at a windmill, David,
yes,
you know that's not made of plastic.
No.
Made of steel.
Yes.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a filing from a SPAC.
What does that have to do with steel?
Well, I'm trying to prepare for something I wanted to discuss, but you should feel free to finish your point. Yes, I'm going to talk about something Mr. Gensler probably needs to focus on at the SEC
as well. You want to school Gensler?
No, not at all.
Thank you. Is this one of the six space SPACs, perhaps?
It is not. This one is actually called Deep Green Metals. The ticker, though, is SOAC. And the deal was approved to acquire Deep Green Metals. But in fact, this goes to a trend I've been talking about a lot lately, which is the enormous percentage of shareholders who choose to redeem, leaving companies with far less cash than they'd originally anticipated when they put their deal together and when they drew out when they thought they would get to profitability. This is particularly of interest to companies that are in their early growth stages. Many of them, of course, we know are planning to go public through SPACs. And in this case, the company had expected to have as much as $570 million, Jim, when they emerged in their public form, de-SPAC, so to speak. But with 91% of shareholders saying we want our 10 bucks back,
they
only took in $27.2 million from the trust versus what was obviously going to be a lot more. And then two-thirds of their pipe holders, remember the private investment in public equity, comes along with when they announced their transaction. Two-thirds of them said we're not funding. So they're suing their pipe holders.
And ones, you mean the usual gang?
I'm not sure who the names were here. They wind up with what is $137 million, in cash. That's prior to transaction fees.
Versus what did they expect?
$570 million.
Oh, my. This is a favorite SPAC.
By the way, I don't even know what their transaction fees could be. $50-60 million. And I guess the point here is we want more transparency, but we also need to understand that in many of these cases where they don't meet the minimum cash requirement, which is $250 million, so they're coming in well below that, the companies are going to have to issue equity, Jim. They're going to have to dilute current shareholders to raise more cash to actually try to implement their business plan, one would expect. If you went in saying we're going to have $570 million in cash, and in fact you're going to have, who knows, $100 million, That's a big differential.
Let me ask. One of the things
this is
really
happening more often than not.
One of the things that bothers me about SPACs, there's no real reason. You are, for all intents and purposes, the only source on this. So people own this. There's nothing you're going to dial up a Goldman Sachs
one of these
support.
Stocks that, no, it's one of these stocks that went up again because the float is so much less than people anticipated. So you can't short it, and you got to cover if you were short. And so that's why they had that move.
The mechanics aren't working correctly.
No, they're not. It's an interesting area that we're in with SPACs. So many trading below 10, such high levels of redemption, far less cash being available to the company once it de-SPACs. And so, yeah, I keep reporting on it because
no,
I think
to.
It's interesting.
Well, I think we all remember the Michael Sembolis report, Eye on the Market from J.P. Morgan, where he said this is going to lead to basically to a crash. And anybody who bought these in the public markets right now is with an S&P that's been so hot. It's just been crushed. It's a shame.
We got a lot of deals this morning, too, Jim. I'm sure you've seen some of them. This Cadman, Sanofi buying that. Big premium. Stock's up a lot. It's $9.50 is the actual deal. It's all cash. It's going to require a shareholder vote. Kind of an interesting part of it as well is that Sanofi actually is reserving the right. I want to find this here. Where is that? Again, back to my SEC filings. They include that if they get a standard form letter from the Federal Trade Commission in the form announced and disclosed by the FTC. Remember they said that they reserve the right to send form letters even after deals have closed,
yes,
saying, don't be so sure, we can still come after you. And they put this in here that, in fact, Sanofi would basically have the right to walk if they even get one of those form letters. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is.
For this Cadman. Unclear whether they will get a form letter, although it's a form letter. So it's pretty easy for the FTC to send these. And it would seem to give Sanofi the right to, if they want to, walk, so something to keep in mind there. But a big premium, although I'm seeing a couple of analysts, Jim, who had even higher price targets for KDMN, the company being acquired.
You know, transplants increasingly more just a regular part of the tools of doctors, but the prices that some of these companies are paying because they have worrisome patent cliffs or they haven't developed things. I mean, Sanofi was not able to pull it off with GlaxoSmithKline in terms of doing a great vaccine company, and they weren't able to do one. And
yep.
Obviously, the companies that got vaccines into the marketplace are doing far better than the ones that don't. This company needs to do something. That's my thinking. It needs to do something. Now, how do you feel about Glaxo and Emma Walmsley with Elliott? How do you feel about it?
I should ask you how you feel about it, because I don't really have a feeling on it.
The pressure's being ratcheted up in a way that has to make Dame Walmsley very, very, I'm not saying annoyed. I'm not saying threatened. But let's just say Elliott has basically said she's done badly and we need a total shakeup. But it is a British crown jewel. You know, see, it's not like, you know, it's kind of like Arm Holdings, another British crown jewel, except for NVIDIA's offering, I think, a lot to be able to keep them, make the British feel better. But I think we have to watch this GlaxoSmithKline. I think it's going to get real ugly, really ugly. And Elliott, I think, raises a number of good points. But Glaxo's got to come out swinging. They got to come out and say, listen, here's the way it is. Our stock's not doing nearly as bad as you think. And look what we've come up with. But they've been too silent, or let's just say too passive.
There's a lot of, we got downgrades yesterday of J&J, Amgen, Merck.
That was something.
Were people just waiting for, got to shake up the space?
I was just shocked at this was kind of a stagflation call. J&J continues to go down. J&J had been loved. So I thought that was very meaningful. Yeah.
Overall, a bit of a mixed market this morning. We are getting some help from energy, up 1% on the S&P as oil gets close to $69.50. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, guys. Happy Wednesday. Important thing here is it's a flattish open. Carl's right. But supply chain issues are going on longer than anticipating, starting to weigh on the market. Take a look at the sectors here. Materials a bit on the weak side. Tech, which has been a market leader for a while, also slightly on the weak side. Consumer discretionary flattish. Banks have been moving sideways for months now and haven't been able to get much traction at all. So you see a flattish open. But beneath that, I would call this so far great numbers, strong demand everywhere, but kind of story. And but mostly is around labor and supply chain issues. So the big discussion today was around Sherwin-Williams and what they were talking about. And they did emphasize they've had terrific demand, strong demand, but raw material availability is not improving. So in the second quarter, their sales were impacted 3.5% negatively because of inability to get raw materials. In the third quarter, now they're saying sales are going to be impacted in the high single digit. This is going on longer than people anticipated. And we've seen this. We saw this yesterday with PPG. Same thing. What are they doing? They're adding a 4% price surcharge, but they made it very clear through the end of the year, they'll add more or keep going if they have to. In other words, right now, they still have pricing power. So that's helping them out a little. And that's probably the reason the stock is only down about 3%. But nonetheless, the fact that all of a sudden now we're into the third quarter and possibly the fourth quarter with this going on is starting to become an issue. And we've seen that out there. Same thing with the home builders. Great demand. We still see it out there. Pulte came out and emphasized we have strong demand. But look what they're talking about. They had lower closings than expected. Why? Well, it wasn't because the demand was lower. They had supply chain issues. They've had problems with getting materials. They've got labor shortages that are out there. So the home builders, they're down today. But if you watch them, they topped out in May. But still, their overall numbers have been very strong recently. So look what's going on underpinning the rally. We've had record earnings. We've had record margins. And we've had low interest rates and strong revenue growth. This supply chain problem eats away at the edges, not dramatically, but it starts to eat away at the edges of the margin story and the strong earnings growth story. And that's why the market's a little bit on edge. The reason we're holding up so well is what you're seeing right here. Technology continues to see earnings estimates go up. Why? Because technology wins if there's more COVID or loses, and wins if there's less COVID. That's what's going on, essentially. So today, 28% growth in third quarter earnings for technology. A few 2 months ago, 22%. That's a strong increase. This is the largest sector. It drags everyone up. Communication services also up. Healthcare, another generally associated with the growth category, got a lot of biotech in there. Same situation. 14% growth today for the third quarter. It was essentially 7% going back to July 1st. Because you have, Carl, these incremental increases every week in the earnings estimates for the biggest sectors, the S&P continues to hold up very well. And, Carl, I have never seen so much interest in people trying to figure out whether earnings estimates are going up or going down on a week-by-week basis. Only me and six other people in the world used to ever watch this on a weekly basis. Now it's a part of the conversation every single day. Carl, back to you.
Fascinating. Thanks, Bob. Yeah. Bob Pisani. Before we go to break, let's take a look at the bond report, see how treasuries are faring this morning. We are going to get a 10-year note auction this afternoon. We'll watch that. 136 right now. Also, Yellen has sent a letter to House leadership about the debt limit. Says the most likely outcome is that cash and extraordinary measures will be exhausted during the month of October. We're back in a moment. Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan reportedly made multiple stock trades of $1 million or more last year. The Journal cites some financial disclosures provided by his bank. They show that Kaplan's moves are in contrast with other regional Fed leaders who reported more modest holdings and smaller transactions. Good discussion on Squawk today with Richard Fisher, formerly of the Dallas Fed, about how there are strict rules and how you do want some market experts to balance out the academics on the committee.
I used to handle the finances of St. Louis Fed president. When I was at Goldman Sachs, and I would say, listen, I think we got to buy some Kimberly Clark Good Yield. Maybe we ought to buy some Ford Motor Credit paper. Once he said no to Kimberly Clark, I said, Ford Motor Credit was great. That was great credit. And he said, do you know who I am? I'm a Fed president. I buy treasuries, and that's all I will ever buy. Hmm. And do not insult the office.
Well, Robert Kaplan also worked at Goldman Sachs, and it may be that in part that informs him and or also brings his affinity for investing in the equity markets, right?
Some good positions.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he was a senior member of that firm.
Kaplan's terrific, and times have changed. But I do know that it obviously drew scrutiny, we wouldn't be talking about it. But I think that disclosure cures everything. So maybe you think I'm contradictory, but I do know that I got screamed at by a Fed official for even thinking about buying Ford Motor Credit.
It was a long time ago. Different world.
It was a long time ago.
Before CEOs took to Twitter to chastise the SEC. It's different times, Jim.
SEC needs to be schooled. Didn't Musk? Yeah.
Yeah.
What an insult.
We will get stock trading with Jim in a moment. For the moment, Dow's up 16. Don't go anywhere. Time for Cramer and stock trading.
People want to automate repetitive behavior, and what you do at the office is you bring in UiPath. And UiPath is a very expensive stock. They reported last night, and it looks like people are upset that the company's guidance wasn't that good. I say, give me a break. This is a big Kathy Wood name, and it is an excellent company. And I think that at a certain point, even though it's very expensive,
I think people are going to come back to it. So don't give up the ship if you own UiPath.
All right. Sure. How about tonight?
Okay, so got
Cleveland Cliffs.
Absolutely. And then, you know, one of the unsung stories that people just refuse to talk about, I don't know why, is Signet. Janet Drozos, this is one of the best, SIG. Look at the stock. If anyone wants to look at a chart, just look at that. And then Tomer Weingarten, this is Sentinel One, one of the companies that does artificial intelligence, cybersecurity. It's also been a rocket ship. And David, you probably remember letter S.
I do.
Well, being Sprint.
I do remember that
as well.
Well,
that stock did a lot of go down.
Tomer did join us when they went public.
I thought it was the first time.
No.
Wasn't. Second time on CNBC?
Second time, yeah.
Second time.
But that's all right, because then he'll be with you the third time and the fourth time and the fifth time.
I'm a competitive guy. I lined up some people when I was in Italy. You won't believe it.
I bet.
The block, blow your socks.
For our show.
No.
Oh.
No. Evening show. Speaking of which, Mad Money with Jim Cramer, 6 p.m. Eastern time. We'll see you then, Jim.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.